If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, folks, you are listening to a new edition of Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. As with everything these days, it's not quite as simple as it seems. So Leslie Ann Jones, who's on the other end of this line to me, has been battling the technology, not manfully, but womanly, with members of her family, and got us up and running now on a new podcast we're about to do. Leslie Ann, a huge welcome to you back to Planet Porky, and many thanks to your team of technology experts at your end.
No problem, Mike. It's wonderful to be back.
Yes, absolutely. I tell you. Now, you're going to shout at me now, aren't you? Because, you know, lockdown, of course, plays tricks on people's minds, funny games and that kind of stuff, and you've been upset with me over the weekend.
Well, I really have. You know, I saw a picture of you with a cigarette hanging from your bottom lip on Twitter. Yes. What kind of idiot are you, Mike?
Well,
you know, in the middle of a pandemic of COVID-19, coronavirus, this is a lung disease. This is transmitted
via
your breathing apparatus.
Mm.
You are taking a massive risk with your life. Not only that, but you're a terrible influence on all your followers. So I want you to stop that nonsense now.
Well, I will stop it right away. And first of all, I've got to apologise to all the people who watch me. But I have to say, it's my first cigarette in about 2 years. I mean, I've always been, in the past, a bit of a social smoker, you know, a couple of cigarettes after dinner or something like that, or when I went out late at night, I might succumb. And simply, you know, lockdown gets on you. I was sitting out in the roof garden. It was a lovely evening and all that. And I don't know, I suddenly had the urge. So I paid £15 for a pack of cigarettes brought to me by one of the list of delivery drivers I have in my, you know, my contacts book locally in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey. And I got halfway through that cigarette and then thought, this is foolish, and threw it away. So that's my £15 cigarette. But I know I don't recommend this medically, and there's no medical evidence, but I have this theory that if you have one cigarette about every 2 months, it expands your lungs, you know?
No, it's absolute nonsense. Where did you get that from?
Well,
I'm reading the tabloids again, Mike.
Well,
I mean, you know, we know that you have a weak heart.
Yeah.
We know that this is a lung disease. We know that this will kill you if you can't get oxygen to your organs. This is what it's all about.
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm not saying throw them away because you might...
Oh, have thrown them away. Do you know what I do? To stop the temptation happening again, I then take the packet with, you know, 19 remaining cigarettes in it, and I put it under the tap and fill the packet full of water, and then all the cigarettes shoot up and start floating, and I just throw them all away. I mean, it's
all set like some money, you know. You could stand over the stove and burn £20 notes if you want.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely true. But anyway, look, message understood, lesson learnt, and as I say, I'm not recommending anybody to ever do that. In fact, smoking is a filthy habit, and I do regret doing it. I'd had also a glass of wine for the first time in about 4 or 5 days. That may have given me some sort of heady feeling in the head. But nevertheless, how is lockdown treating yourself?
Well, pretty good. I mean, you know, we're a smoke-free zone here. I have never actually had a cigarette in my life.
No.
I have only wet devices. We are partaking of a glass of Merlot of an evening in front of whatever we decide to watch. We watch a television program together, the three of us. I've got my two daughters here.
Yeah.
And we choose something usually while we're cooking. You know, we try and avoid the news in the evening because the news is pretty depressing. I think everyone would agree.
Yeah.
So I tend to catch up with news at lunchtime. I usually watch the parliamentary briefing at about 5 o'clock.
Yeah, I do.
after that news is bad, because we're having very odd dreams in our house, and that seems to be a universal thing out there.
Yeah.
And we don't want to encourage any nightmares.
No, I totally agree with all of that. One group of people who apparently are very good at this, and the government are actually thinking about putting them on television, are groups of nuns who live in isolation most of their lives, okay, and how they mentally adjust themselves to no contact. For instance, I was, from one of my journals, I saw a piece of a group of nuns who live in one nunnery where they don't even speak to each other between 8 o'clock at night and 10 o'clock the following morning. It's called the Great Silence.
Well, they're silent orders, yes.
Yeah, sorry?
They are called silent orders.
Yeah, but I mean, to me, that is a barbaric way of life. You know, if these women have devoted their life to God and, you know, to a spirit, that's a very, very cruel way to ask somebody to live their lives, not communicating for a good 14 hours of the day to another human being, living in isolation, living in cells on their own. They might as well be in prison. They're only allowed out. How about this? They're only allowed out once every 6 months for a walk on the South Downs, which is near me here in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey, and they can go once every 6 months to a doctor or a dentist for a checkup. Don't you think that's brutal?
Well, unless you take into account the way they communicate with God, and to them it is a privilege to be living in their order and to be devoting their life to their faith. And it's hard for us in the real world, we mere mortals, yeah, to comprehend that kind of lifestyle, but I think they see it a different way.
Yeah, well, they clearly do, but I mean, I just couldn't do it. You know, I mean, I'm a believer, I'm a Christian. I, you know, sometimes go to church, but I follow the Christian way of life, but I couldn't have a life of devotion like that, because I think it's against the human spirit, and it really worries me. About my heart, by the way, which I was going to say to you was, I should have gone in for a bit of treatment on my heart before all the lockdown came along. And now, of course, the problem is that I can't go to the hospital. My hospital is Harefield, not because they're overwhelmed, because they're a specialist hospital. They do transplants, lungs and hearts and that kind of stuff. But the fear of... Say again.
Too far away for you.
Well, I could work it out in a sanitized car to get there and all that kind of stuff. You know, my own car is perfectly safe and all that. But you might not be able to drive back, depending on what sort of drugs they give you and all that kind of stuff. But not only that, they don't want anybody in that hospital in case they bring in. They've got some of the most vulnerable people in this country in there waiting for heart transplants and that sort of thing. They can't possibly risk you having in. I read, by the way, Leslie Ann, that A&E departments on a Saturday night now are almost virtually deserted because people are not going out and getting drunk and causing problems, and people are reluctant to even go to hospitals because they read all these stories all the time about there being germs and diseases in hospitals. And it seems one benefit of the National Health Service is it's taken pressure off other areas.
Well, doesn't it just show that so many visits to A&E are superfluous and actually needn't be taking their toll on the health service at all? But going back to your point about Harefield,
yes,
it's a very long way from your home. We are instructed not to drive our cars anywhere,
yes,
because we can be carrying the virus.
You can.
On of our car.
Yes.
So this is why they don't want us driving around the place.
Yeah.
And I'm horrified because I live on a B road, a sort of main road in London.
Yeah.
Buses are going up and down, that's fine. We know about buses, but so are cars and so are vans. Mm. Now, where are people going? Because that traffic doesn't seem to have lessened any since the lockdown.
Really?
So, no.
Well, you see, I live on a suburban road off a B road, if you see what I mean. And it's a bit of a rat run, actually, for schools, OK? So that's obviously all gone. My road's deserted. But I do notice when I have to make my occasional foray into town, into Epsom, that there is still quite a lot of traffic on the roads. And like you, I'm thinking, I wonder where it's all coming from and where it's all going to, you know?
And why can't we be shopping in local shops? This is what we've started doing. We're going just with our carrier bags every 4 days or so, getting enough food to make meals for 3 or 4 days. Yeah. And we're walking to do that. I'm not allowed out because I'm asthmatic, so my girls have got me on double lockdown.
Yes.
But very happy to walk down to the main shopping drag and pick up stuff in local shops. And I think that's how everybody should be shopping now. We should not be relying on supermarkets right now.
Well, I kind of agree with that, except that there's a supermarket I can go to, it's a Morrison's, and the aisles are wide apart and there's huge floor space and you can get away from another person. Whereas local shops are tiny and full of people that and their, you know, their private space is going to be very close to your private space, so to speak.
Yeah, they're letting us in one at a time, which, yeah, you know, seems sure to be the way forward. But there is no right way, is there? I just hope everybody's keeping as safe as they can.
Well, they really are. Now, what do you think about the row about Posh and Becks? So Posh runs this international fashion business. I'm not criticising her because I'm one of her biggest fans. She was a member of the world's most popular and successful ever girl band, you know, the Spices. And she now runs this fashion business. It loses money year on year, but lots of businesses do when they start up. But the reports come through that she's furloughing her employees. So that means using government money to pay them during lockdown. And of course, there's a big row because the last rich list in the Sunday Times valued the Beckham duo, David Beckham and Posh, at 335 million quid. So do you think that's an honourable thing she's doing?
Absolutely not. It's outrageous. She's got a handbag collection, just her own handbags in her wardrobe, worth 1.5 million.
I know, it's amazing. It's
a lot of money. Come on, there are businesses being turned down for growing opportunities. I really think they should say no.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's open to everybody. I was listening to that Martin Lewis, you know, the financial expert, terrific guy I've worked with him over the years, and he said, well, you know, furloughing doesn't make any judgments, you know what I mean? If the system's there and it's open for application from businesses, you can do it. I mean, after all, she could turn around and say, well, hang on, for years I've been keeping these people in business while losing 14 million a year, I think it was, in the last account. So, you know, why shouldn't I? But I do accept that, God, you know, when some people are struggling after losing 1 or 2 weeks income, it does seem wrong. What do you think about Noel Gallagher? You probably saw this yesterday. Noel Gallagher, a newspaper report, I thought very, very unkindly, had a headline over a picture of him and called him obnoxious. And that's because he...
Well, he is obnoxious.
Well, you can tell us about that in a minute. But it says, Mr. Obnoxious, Noel Gallagher. This is in a diary, you know, a diary column, and it's supposed to be about cosmonaut.
It was on Sunday, wasn't it?
It was who?
Mail on Sunday.
Yes, it was. Yeah, absolutely. Opinions from experts are ten a penny at the moment. Last thing we need is another from Noel Gallagher. And he says, I'm more afraid of the consequences of another month of lockdown than I am of the virus. Eventually, they'll have to weigh up the consequences of society and the economy against those who will die. So they call it obnoxious. One more paragraph in which he said, he was asked, how's he treating lockdown? He said, don't worry, I've been pissed every night for the last month, which I think is great, you know, the spirit of what a lot of people are doing. But I think he's entitled to his view, isn't he? Because, you know, there is a broader argument here about, in the long term, will more people die because of lockdown, because they can't get to medical facilities, because they're going to be at home on their own and they're not attended to and they're not looked after? I mean, isn't there an argument either way?
There definitely is, but I don't think it's up to a pop or a rock star to make that argument.
Why not? You're calling him thick.
They have so many millions of followers around the world. They seem to think that they can be a voice of authority.
Yeah.
The time they're talking out of their asses, they don't have the full facts at their fingertips.
Yeah,
you know, good for him if he's pissed every night. He did also say that he's not trolling out to the supermarket or the off license, he's sending someone out.
That's right,
his wife or something. Yeah. You know, so he's not actually taking responsibility for his own pissedness.
Yeah.
I think we can disregard what Mr. Gallagher is saying, can't we?
Well, I like Noel Gallagher. We've had him in to TalkSport a couple of times, OK? And, you know, he's a big football fan, as you know, him and his brother. When him and his brother were talking together, he used to appear regularly in a box at Wembley, the old Wembley, I think. And And he's always good fun and very down to earth, talking about Manchester City and all that. And, you know, he's a huge rock star, as we all know. So I don't mind him expressing an opinion. I mean, crikey, you're writing a book on John Lennon and, you know, John Lennon's opinions altered the world. You know, John Lennon's opinion on Vietnam probably ended the Vietnam War. John Lennon's opinion on oppression probably brought down the Berlin Wall. So aren't you being a little bit choosy here about your rock stars?
Yeah, probably. But I think there were simpler times 40 years ago. You know, things are a lot more complicated now. We know, for example, that there are television presenters, mentioning no names, who are saying that this pandemic is the worst thing the world has ever seen. Now, do they not remember 50 million people died of the Spanish flu, for example? 40 million died in World War One. 80 million died in World War II.
Yeah.
So COVID-19 is not, so far, the worst thing the world has ever seen, but it is killing people, and we do need to acknowledge the advice.
Yeah. No, well, I agree with most of that. And by the way, I agree with you about television presenters who appear to be leading the opposition. I'm not sure what the opposition is to. Is it to the government or to the virus itself? Or, but, you know, every story is condemnation of the way things have been done, condemnation of things not being done, condemnation of not enough equipment and all that. This is an unprecedented situation which we have to get to. Getting back to your book, Leslie Ann, by the way, I was pleased to find out that people can actually start ordering it now. I thought it wasn't out until the autumn.
Well, yeah, we have this magic system called the pre-order scenario.
Yes.
So if anybody's interested, please go to Amazon, to books, and tap in Who Killed John Lennon, The Lives, Loves, and Deaths of the Greatest Rock Star. And there's a holding cover comes up. It's not the actual cover that will be published in September. But you can place a pre-order now if you would like to read the book. Thank you very much.
Absolutely brilliant. Now, you talked about Amazon there. Okay, another amazing story which came across into my vision. I think it was the end of last week or the weekend. Jeff Bezos, who runs Amazon, because of the fact that now people are having to shop online because they're going out to the shops, his fortune in the last month has increased by $24 billion. That's billion.
Yeah, I said that. And I said to Mia, the day that news came out, I turned around to Mia, my daughter, and said, right, all of that money needs to be donated to the cause because he doesn't need it. So the fact that he's benefiting from this dreadful scenario that we're in, he could very easily become a benefactor and donate that money to the cause.
Yeah, well, I suppose he could, but it's an awful lot of money to give away, isn't it? I think Bill Gates gives away that sort of, you know, level of money, but not all at once. Yeah, and the Bill Gates Foundation, Bill and Melissa Gates, is it? What's his wife's name?
Yeah,
Melissa, yeah. And but Jeff Bezos, I mean, he's only been that mega rich for about 5 years, hasn't he, since Amazon became sort of worldwide. And
true, but he's got more money now than he can ever spend in his lifetime.
It's astonishing.
How would you like to be remembered if you were that rich?
Yeah.
I'd like to go down as a world benefactor, wouldn't you? Somebody who had found the cure for COVID-19, or found the cure for cancer or whatever it was, rather than just being remembered as being a rich person.
Yeah, well, maybe, but, you know, I still think, I mean, look, I agree with you. The best thing you can do in life is help others. I've always had that mantra in my life. I've been pretty lucky through the course of my life. I've helped people out. I've helped friends out when they've fallen on hard times and that kind of stuff. And you know, there's a purpose to it. It makes you feel better, but you also want to help. But, I mean, that level of expenditure, it's just astonishing. The other guys, of course, who are under tremendous pressure are professional footballers. And when you think what they earn, is it unreasonable to ask them to support other areas of the football business?
No, I don't think it's unreasonable at all, because we have to remember that only a tiny minority of them are worth the kind of money you're talking about. Mm. You know, there are clubs, non-league clubs, way down the chart, clubs who just don't have the kind of money to survive. And we don't want football to go out of business. So I think it would be a very good time for the Premier League to help out the other leagues and to keep everybody in a job.
I think you may be right.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, folks, you are listening to Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for tuning in today. Obviously, Leslie Ann and I were off the air for about 2 or 3 weeks, but due to the wonders of modern technology, and particularly Leslie Ann and her team, which includes her daughter Mia, we're up and running again, which is a delightful ability to re-communicate. Now, we can't get away, obviously, Leslie Ann, from COVID-19 and lockdown and all that. I was shocked to my boots this morning to read a newspaper headline which said pubs might not reopen until Christmas.
Yeah, I saw it and I despaired because, you know, we've talked before about this wonderful rock and roll lunch that we have twice a year, every June, every December. It's called the Scribblers, Pluckers, Thumpers and Squawkers Lunch. And it's attended by a lot of famous names from the 60s and 70s, you know, rock stars, rock writers, PRs and so on.
Yes.
We've had cancel the lunch in June because the venue, the Bull's Head in Barnes, won't be open.
Yeah.
And we rebooked it for December. And I'm now looking at this news thinking, oh no, what if we have to cancel it again?
Yeah.
We've got so many big names coming in December. But apart from all that, it's the running down of a business, which one of the foundations of this country, the local pub.
Of course it is.
All these people going out of business, all this beer being wasted, and of course, the damage to our lifestyle as well. It's part of all our game.
I totally agree. I mean, an English pub to me, and you know, you and I have worked all over the world. I lived in America for 3 years. There's nothing like the English pub, particularly a country pub, an English country pub. I sometimes, you know, walk over the North Downs, the South Downs, and the target at the end is always a pub. And if it's got a thatched roof and a roaring fire in the winter and it's welcoming, it's absolutely wonderful, you know. And I love the English pub, not just because it serves alcohol. I love the atmosphere. I love the, you know, the camaraderie of it all and the character and all that kind of stuff. So it breaks my heart not to be able to go to the pub because it makes me feel better. Now, summer's coming and I live, as I say, in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey and down on the coast. And I know plenty of pubs that have got really big gardens, you know, with tables spread out all over, almost like a field type situation. I don't understand why they can't reopen the gardens.
Well, I don't either. But then I suppose if you compare your tiny little, you know, there are some very small pubs, especially all over London, places where you can barely fit six people in.
It's true.
Can they say yes for some to open and no to others? Can they discriminate in that way?
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that they think a blanket ban is the only way forward.
Yeah, and I know it's very difficult to pick and choose between, you know, somebody whose pub is open in the garden will have a row about somebody whose pub isn't because their beer garden is so tiny at the back, it's just a paved place, you know what I mean? So, yeah, we have to be aware of all that. Now, tell me this, Leslie-Ann, have you ever been a fan of Agatha Christie?
Oh, yeah, fantastic. Yes, and she's very much back in the news, isn't she?
Yeah.
Talking about the period of time in 1926, I mean, it's almost 100 years ago, incredibly. She went missing for a while, didn't she?
Yeah, I mean, that story's quite well documented and quite well known, but she's such a figure of fascination. A new book is coming out about the 11 days in which she went missing, you know, and you will probably see the...
called Andrew Wilson, and it's a novel. It's called A Talent for Murder. So it's not a biographical piece telling us what really happened to her.
Oh, is it not?
But it's a piece of fiction based on her disappearance.
Oh, I'm talking about a book called Agatha Christie, A Mysterious Life.
Oh, okay. That's a whole other book.
No, that's fine. And it is so touching that this woman, right, when she was in her mid-20s, she was already like a very famous author, and her husband was a, believe it or not, a World War One fighter pilot, never mind the old, you know, Spitfires of the Second World War. This guy was an even bigger hero than that. He flew like Tiger Moths, you know, with twin wings, you know, biplanes and that kind of stuff. And then became a major in the what was then still the Royal Army Flying Corps and all this kind of stuff. and they got married and were happily living in domestic bliss down here in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey, when all of a sudden she realised that he'd fallen in love with his golfing partner, or a woman he met at the golf club, you know, a younger woman. And she just, she drove off one night, and because he didn't come home, he was with his mistress, and she literally disappeared for 11 days. She went up to Harrogate in Yorkshire and stayed in a hotel, and there was a worldwide search going on for her. But can you imagine?
The weird thing about that, when she checked into the hotel,
yeah,
she registered under the name of her husband's lover.
I know.
Well, could you pick it up? I mean, that is a novelist.
Yeah, but not only that, but I mean, I just felt my heart bled for the poor woman because she was so distraught and so hurt at losing her husband. You know what I mean? It was this handsome war hero, love of her life, didn't come home one night. He went to see his mistress instead, and it completely knocked her sideways. And yet she...
Long old story, I'm afraid. You know, it happens every day, doesn't it? All walks of life.
Yeah, well, it does happen in all walks of life. But to me, it was just, I mean, how could a guy leave Agatha Christie? You know what I mean? I mean, there's a picture of it.
36, you know, so she wasn't exactly over the hill.
No, that's what I mean. And there's a picture of her at that age, and she's a very good-looking young lady, but she's also a genius, you know. It's a woman who invented Poirot, you know, and Miss Marple and all that. How on earth could you leave a woman who's that interesting? I just don't get it.
Here's what I think. It, you know, writing is a very solitary pursuit.
Yeah.
And we who do that for a living sit on our own at desks for hours upon hours on end.
Yes.
And maybe, I'm not making excuses for Archibald Christie,
yes,
but perhaps there was a scenario going on where he felt neglected.
Yeah, well, it could be. You're currently writing again at the moment, aren't you?
Yes, I am, yeah. I'm actually ghostwriting the biography of a music business executive. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
But back to Agatha, you know, she went missing for 11 days.
Yeah.
She had, she said later, been considering committing suicide.
Yeah.
But then her Christian belief got to her, and she remembered that suicide was a sin.
Yeah.
And so she invented that period of amnesia. That was the excuse she gave to the media.
Yeah.
To cover up for what she'd really been intending to do.
Yeah, I thought suicide was only a sin in the Catholic Church. I didn't realise it's a sin in the Church of England Church.
Oh, it's a mortal sin, yeah.
It is a mortal sin, is it? Oh, it's a good job I've never thought about it, because...
Don't go there. We need you, Mike. Don't go there.
Oh, no, I'm not going there. Don't worry. Now, we've talked about pubs. We talked about Noel Gallagher. So let's put the two together so that I can let the world know that my poem, Ode to the English Tavern, okay, which I wrote like 10 days ago as a plea to, you know, reopen the pubs when the time is right, because, you know, everybody's missing them. And I think I read it to you, didn't I, my last podcast?
It's a fine lyrical work, Mike.
Yes, a fine piece of work. Well, believe it or not, it's such a fine piece of work. Some people described it as Shakespearean, okay? But it was, it's been taken on by a young musician, a guy called Joe Amplethwaite, right? What's his name? He's a colleague of mine anyway at TalkSport, and he's a terrific guy, terrifically technically talented. He's also a Beatles expert. He's a young fella, right, only in his 30s, but he's a world expert on the Beatles. Can you believe that? He just loves the music, loves the Beatles. He goes off to stay at the Hard Day's Night Hotel in Liverpool for Beatles conventions and all that, and he fronts his own group as well. So he got hold of my words and put them to music, and it's now a song, Ode to the English Tavern.
Can we play it now?
We can't play it now because I don't know how to get hold of it whilst... I'm talking to you, because I'm not that good at the system. But what?
So where can your followers find this fine lyrical work?
They'll find it either on Life on Planet Porky on YouTube, okay, or they will find it on Twitter. Just go to my Twitter account, which is Mike Parry 8, and you'll find it on my timeline. And there's a link there which takes you to the full version, which is about 2 minutes and 40 seconds, and I think you'll all agree it will be the sort of thing that will very much lift your spirits.
I'm thrilled that you've done that.
Yes.
All power to you, Mike, for supporting the nation.
Well, indeed. I want to raise the spirits of the nation. Of course I do. And I think everybody should. Now, Leslie Ann, you are immersed in the world of rock and roll, and you have been for some, I don't know, 3 or 4 decades, because that's your expertise. Now, have you ever heard of a guy called Tony Burrows?
Oh, yeah, Edison Lighthouse.
Oh,
you remember
unbelievable.
That song? Unbelievable. Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes. Do you remember that?
Right. Oh, yeah. No, I love that record. And my love grows like my rosemary goes, and nobody knows but me. What was the next verse? It was, I'm a lucky fella, and I've got to tell her that I want to certainly, or something like that. But anyway, look.
You really are wasted.
You're absolutely right. So anyway, point of story is, so doing some research on various things and joining the ranks of performers myself, I come across this guy, Tony Burrows. And this is a biography of him. He's still alive, I think, but this is a biography of him. It says, Tony Burrows is possibly the most successful singer that nobody's ever heard of. He was a session singer born in Exeter in 1942. His pop career began in the early 60s with a group called the Kestrels. They toured with the Beatles and backed Joe Brown and Billy Fury, both, of course, whom were very famous in their day in the 60s, OK? Burrows joined the Ivy League after their most successful years, and then they morphed into the Flower Pot Men, OK? He was lead singer, I didn't realise this, on the one-hit wonder, Let's Go to San Francisco.
Oh, my God, he got around, didn't he?
Yeah. Do you remember that one? Let's go to San Francisco, where the flowers grow so very tall. I mean, you know, utterly fantastic. So he sang that one. He was a prolific session singer rather than a touring pop star. Burrows achieved 4 major hits in 4 consecutive months in 4 different groups and fronted them all on Top of the Pops.
Is he in the Guinness Book of Records?
Yes. So between February 1970 and May 1970, he was the lead singer of Edison Lighthouse, Love Grows Where My Rosemary Goes, okay, The White Plains, My Baby Needs Loving.
Oh, I don't remember that one.
Yeah. The Brotherhood of Man, United We Stand. God, I remember that one. And united we stand, divided we fall. And then in the following month, he duetted on the Pipkins' rubbish single called Gimme That Ding. Gimme that, gimme that, gimme, gimme, gimme that, gimme that ding, gimme that, gimme, gimme that. It's unbelievable, isn't it? Eh?
Terrible pop songs in the 70s, weren't
they? That's right. A few years later, in June 1974, he once again hit the top of the charts when he sang lead vocals on Beach Baby with the First Class. Was that the one that went, Beach Baby, da-da-da, or whatever, you know? Anyway, no.
I always think that was, what was that Scottish group, the ones who wore tartan trousers? What were they called?
Oh, Bay City Rollers.
I always thought that was them, but probably not. Or maybe they did a cover of it or something.
Maybe they did, because no, you're right. It was about the same time. No, the one, Beach Baby, I'm not sure anyway. But Bay City Rollers, did you have any dealings with them, or were you too young?
No, I mean, I haven't quite got there yet, but, you know, you learn about all this stuff retrospectively, don't you?
Yeah.
They were fascinating periods in our pop and rock history.
Oh yeah. I mean, I thought the Bay City Rollers as a phenomenon were fantastic. I was working on the Newcastle Evening Chronicle in those days, and I had to go along to a concert there and do a review of them. And I thought they were utter rubbish, but you know, the phenomenon was like the Beatles. You know, all these young girls, you know, screaming and shouting and fainting and all that kind of stuff. And when I wrote a review of them, say that music was rubbish, I got death threats. You know, from all over Tyneside, we're going to get you. You know, we love the Rollers. A bit like how the Spice Girls turned out, which we've already talked about. Now, since we last conversed, a colleague of ours in the media world, Ms. Jane Garvey, has insulted Arctic Roll.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she said Arctic Roll is a very low-level pudding. When we had it at home, I was always very disgruntled by it. Don't you think that's snobbish, you know,
yeah,
at all?
I Yeah, I don't mean to insult Jane in return. But yeah, look, I mean, all the bets are off now. People can eat whatever they like. They can drink whatever they like. I think we're all rediscovering foods, like things like beans on toast.
Yes.
You know, I was wowing my daughters the other day with the news that we actually used to eat spaghetti on toast. And she said, how disgusting is that? Because that was a very common thing when I was a kid.
Yeah, no,
spaghetti on toast, egg on toast.
Yeah, yeah.
The fare was not varied in those days. I think we should not turn up our noses at any kind of cuisine right now.
No, I totally agree. I totally agree. And I've always been mocked by friends and colleagues for being such a basic food eater, okay? So, for instance, it's quite well known that my favourite foods are fish fingers. I love fish fingers, just with, you know, a tin of peas or something like that. I love beans on toast, like you say. I like sausages and I like bacon, all that kind of stuff. I don't like exotic foods. I don't like exotic restaurants.
We've had Thai lunch together.
Yes, we have had Thai lunch, but Thai's lovely, isn't it? You know,
really good.
That's Thai food. But what I'm saying is I don't like what you might call, you know, like poncy restaurants in the West End, whose combination of sort of flavours and all that kind of stuff completely turns me off, and whose portions are either ridiculously small or too complicated for me to work out. You know what I mean? I like basic food. That's why my ideal of a great meal would be, you know, literally a sort of pub somewhere in Stockbroker Belt that served fantastic roasts on a Sunday or something like that.
Yeah, perfect. But, you know, it's nursery food, isn't it? It's comfort food. And I think in these unsettled, hopeless, dangerous times, what we want are things to comfort us. And I completely understand people regressing to the kind of foods that they enjoyed when they were children.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's not that I enjoyed it when I was children. I've enjoyed fish fingers a lot more as an adult than I did as a child. I mean, my mum used to give us food.
Fish finger, Mike. Talk me through the fish finger.
Well, the fish fingers are easy. I put them in the oven, you see, and bake them. I don't sort of cook them in a pan because I like them soft, not crispy. I have a delicacy called the fish finger pyramid, which I build a pyramid of fish fingers and I put the peas in the middle, and it's fabulous. Bit like
how many do you have fish fingers?
Say again.
How many do you eat at a time?
10.
10 fish fingers?
Yeah, but I don't have any potatoes or anything. I just have fish fingers, as I say, in a fish finger pyramid and the peas in the middle. And that to me is very exotic. Now, Leslie Ann, because, of course, your genre is show business entertainment, I must talk to you about the return of Killing Eve, okay? Because Villanelle, isn't it? Yeah. She is a woman with whom I recognise enormously. Fantastic woman. Greatest female personality, in my view, on television. The new series of Villanelle and Killing Eve started last night as we're speaking today. And I can't wait. I could watch all the episodes now because it's on iPlayer or something, isn't it? But
it's too violent, as you know. I don't do violence, so I haven't watched this. So you're on your own here.
Well, I don't know why you wouldn't be attracted to it. She is an empowered woman. You know, she's an assassin. She's a woman who's born in poverty in Russia and got out of that, and now lives very exotically in Paris, because she goes around killing people. That's her trade. And that, to me, is total empowerment for the female race, isn't it?
Well, go around killing people. I'm not really sure about your argument.
Well, no, I'm not saying that killing people's a good idea. What I'm saying is she has matched any male exponent of her art literally blow by blow, and is better than them, and also it's written by the lady Phoebe Waller, you know, the woman who wrote Fleabag and starred in Fleabag, and it's an extremely attractive script. It's dark humour all the time, and the ease with which Villanelle goes around killing people. For instance, she swarms away into society, and then when there's a woman who's got to be got rid of, she gives her a little bottle of perfume and says, you know, I adore you so much, I'll have this perfume. Of course, the perfume turns out to be one of the most noxious poisons in the world, you know, kills the woman, all that kind of stuff. I mean, she stops at nothing, but she's paid a huge amount of money she's a freelance killer, for going around killing. Now, talking about Russia, by the way, do you have a view on Vladimir Putin?
Well, he's a sinister type, isn't he?
Yeah.
I've not met him, have you?
No, but I've been to Russia a few times, and I think I've said before, I've expressed my admiration for Russia, for its architecture, for the stoicism of its people, for all the years of communism that they had to suffer, and actually for their expansionist ambitions since then. But I've just read a new an excerpt of a new book on Mr. Putin. He was determined, once Russia was taken down, once the Soviet Union collapsed, which I've already said to you, you know, may have been partly responsible to the music of John Lennon. Once Russia collapsed and the Soviet Union fell apart, he was a very senior KGB colonel, and he decided, I'm going to rebuild it. And that's what he's done. I've got to admire him for that. I mean, obviously, we don't like a lot of things the Russians do, because it's not just Villanelle who came out of Russia as an assassin. There is plenty of evidence around that when people oppose the Russian state and then go somewhere around the world, a lot of them end up falling off balconies and things, which is, of course, something I don't support. But have you been to Russia?
Well, no, I haven't. I'm pretty worried about the idea of a secret police in the 21st century, because I just don't think we can exist with this kind of thing going on in society, can we? Where it's all right for citizens of another country to come to ours and to take the law into their own hands and to kill people on our territory. And also, you know what happened in Salisbury with Novichok? We know that Russians were involved. But the world does seem to have turned a blind eye to this, and I find that very worrying.
I think it is. No, that aspect of it is despicable. We can't have people going around the world killing other people in other countries, their nationals and all that. But the reason I'm talking about this, Mr. Putin has just voted himself into power now till 2034, okay? And, you know, that's another, like, 14 years. He's determined.
Well, dictatorship, then, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a dictatorship, except it's supposed to be a democracy. You know, it's one of those...
Cosmetic democracy, I think we'll find.
Yeah, it's one of those strange political systems where, allegedly a democracy, but, you know, 97% of people end up voting for Mr. Putin all the time. And of course, we can't sort of pass over on democracies and dictatorships without referring back to China again. The evidence now coming out of China, just to finish on a note of what everybody's concerned about at the moment, the epidemic, because it's clear that China knew an awful lot more than they told the world at the start.
It's also clear that they haven't been telling the world the truth.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a big expose over the weekend in the Mail on Sunday about the various whistleblowers who've been disappeared.
Just disappeared.
You know, people who come out and said, look, actually, what they're telling you is going on in China is not the case, and this is where the virus came from, and this is why it spread all over the world. Question: why, when they first discovered what was going on in Wuhan with this virus, were foreign nationals all allowed to leave? Why did they not lock Wuhan down and stop the spread of the virus all over the planet?
Yeah, well, all those questions are for hindsight. I think the biggest interesting thing is, and I said this right from the start before it started appearing in newspaper headlines, are we going to send China a bill for the amount of money that the lockdown has caused our economy? Are we going to send China a £300 billion bill?
Well, it's a good question. One of the grossest things I heard was when China came out of lockdown, all the rich Chinese who were rushing into the designer shops and spent over £2 million in one branch of one designer shop. I forget which one it was. Yeah. Hang on a minute. Is this not supposed to be a communist country? Are they not supposed to pour scorn on the materialism of the West?
Yeah.
So how is that a good thing?
Yeah.
But I do think we should be sending them a bill. And I think a lot of people will be thinking, why shouldn't we be suing China for the loss of thousands upon thousands of lives?
Yes, no, I agree. And loss of jobs and you know, a wholesale collapse of the economy and all that. I totally agree with you. But that's for the politicians to work out. Well, Leslie Ann, it's been fabulous to have conversed with you again on this podcast. It's Life on Planet Porky, and Life on Planet Porky wouldn't be Life on Planet Porky without yourself, my dear. We want to keep in touch with our followers and with our listeners now on a regular basis. So if all things work out for us and the technology and all that, We will try, if we can find the time there, because I know you're very busy, to get out a podcast every Tuesday and Friday. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And, you know, keep the messages coming. Keep at us on Twitter. Tell us what you want us to talk about. And tell us what's bothering you. And let us bring a little light to your day.
If we can, we certainly will. Leslie Ann, take care. Have a good rest of the day. Stay safe in the, you know, in the ensuing battle, I suppose it is, for want of a better word, against the COVID-19. We'll talk again very soon. I like Noel Gallagher. We've had him in to TalkSport a couple of times, okay? And, you know, he's a big football fan, as you know, him and his brother. When him and his brother were talking together, he used to appear regularly in a box at Wembley, the old Wembley, I think. And he's always good fun and very down to earth, talking about Manchester City and all that. And, you know, he's a huge rock star, as we all know. So I don't mind him expressing an opinion. I mean, crikey, you're writing a book on John Lennon, and, you know, John Lennon's opinions altered the world. You know, John Lennon's opinion on Vietnam probably ended the Vietnam War. John Lennon's opinion on oppression probably brought down the Berlin Wall. So aren't you being a little bit choosy here about your rock stars?
Through the fish finger?
Well, the fish finger's easy. I put them in the oven, you see, and bake them. I don't sort of cook them in a pan because I like them soft, not crispy. I have a delicacy called the fish finger pyramid, which I build a pyramid of fish fingers and I put the peas in the middle and it's fabulous. A bit like a...
How many do you have fish fingers?
Say again?
How many do you eat at a time?
10.
10 fish fingers?
Yeah, but I don't have any potatoes or anything. I just have fish fingers, as I say, in a fish finger pyramid and the peas in the middle. How could a guy leave Agatha Christie?
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.